Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Get the long-lasting power you need with Energizer. Menards has the largest in-stock selection of Energizer batteries. They provide solid power for flashlights, remotes, and so much more. Right now, save big on Energizer batteries. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
Part 1. It's a crisp Thursday morning, the kind that hits at the edge of summer with just enough warmth to make you forget about the winter past. Our private investigation office, a modest second-floor space above a bustling cafe on Magazine Street in New Orleans, is alive with the usual morning chaos. My wife, Renee, and I are in the midst of showing Abby, our new secretary, the ins and outs of our, let's call it, unique filing system. Abby, a young woman with bright blue eyes and an infectious enthusiasm for detective work, nods vigorously, taking notes on her pad.
CC,
I start, holding up a file.
Each case has its own color code. Red for ongoing cases, blue for solved, and green for... well, let's just call it active investigations.
Abby nods, her eyes scanning the rainbow of folders on the desk.
And the glitter stickers?
She asks, pointing to a file adorned with sparkling unicorns. I glance at Renee, who's trying to hide her smirk behind a cup of coffee.
That's Renee's system. You'll have to ask her about that.
Renee leans over, her voice laced with mock seriousness.
The glitter is crucial, Abby. It represents the mystery of the case. The more glitter, the deeper the intrigue.
Abby looks between us, a flicker of confusion passing through her eyes before she catches on to our jest.
Got it. Glitter equals mystery. I'll remember that.
And remember,
Renee says, pointing to a large, overly complex calendar on the wall.
If someone asks for an urgent meeting and the calendar looks full, just tell them we're consulting on a case in Baton Rouge. It buys us some time.
Abby nods vigorously, taking notes on her pad.
Got it. Baton Rouge. And if they ask for details?
I glance at Renee with a mischievous grin.
Then you say we're undercover, and it's a matter of national security. They rarely ask after that.
Just as we're wrapping up our impromptu tutorial with Abby, there's a sudden, sharp knock at the door, cutting through the relaxed atmosphere of the morning like a knife. I stride over and pull it open to reveal a woman in her early 40s, her poise teetering on the edge of despair. She introduces herself in a voice that carries a weight far beyond her years.
Hello, detectives Asher and Renee Tran. I'm Ashley Everly. I believe I have an appointment for a consultation.
I nod, remembering a conversation over the phone last week, though the specifics elude me.
Of course, Miss Everly, please come in. Abby, could you pull up the Everly file on the desktop, please? Should be under E.
Before Abby can even turn to the computer, Astrid interjects.
There's no need for that. I'm here because I suspect my husband, Zane, of infidelity.
Her voice falters for a moment, the facade of calmness cracking. Renee sets her coffee down with a soft clink, her expression shifting into one of professional empathy.
We understand how difficult this must be for you, Miss Everly, she says gently.
I motion for Astrid to take a seat.
You come to the right place, I begin. We handle matters discreetly and efficiently. cheating spouse investigations might not be glamorous, but they are the bread and butter of our business. And in our experience, the truth, however painful, is what our clients need most. As I gesture towards the worn but comfortable chairs, Renee busies herself with the small coffee maker in the corner of our office.
Cream and sugar, Miss Everly?
Renee calls out. Astrid nods, a grateful smile briefly crossing her face.
Just cream, thank you.
Her composure momentarily lifted by the gesture seems to falter as the gravity of her situation resettles around her. I sit across from Astrid, my posture open, inviting her to share her story. Abby, sensing this shift in atmosphere, quietly retreats to her desk, giving us space. Miss Everly, can you tell us why you suspect your husband might be unfaithful? I ask, my tone gentle yet earnest, signaling that this is a safe space for her to vent her concerns. Astrid exhales a shaky breath, her dark brown eyes glistening with unshed tears as she starts to unravel the thread of her story.
It's the little things, really.
She begins, her voice a whisper of despair.
Zane has always been a loving husband and father, but lately he's been distant. He comes home late, if he comes home at all, and when he does, it's like his mind is elsewhere.
She pauses, collecting her thoughts before continuing.
Then there's his phone. It used to be just another gadget, but now it's like an extension of himself. He guards it jealously, and never leaves it unattended. And if I so much as glance in its direction, he snaps at me, saying I'm invading his privacy.
Astrid's hands clench together, the knuckles whitening.
But what really convinced me was the perfume,
she adds, a note of betrayal creeping in her voice.
I found a scarf in his car, one that definitely wasn't mine. It was drenched in a perfume I'd never worn, a scent that now seems to linger on him constantly.
The room falls silent, the weight of her pain palpable in the air. Renee hands Astrid her coffee with cream, offering a small, comforting smile.
I confronted him about it,
Astrid continued, her gaze dropping to the cup in her hands.
He denied everything, of course. Said the scarf must belong to a co-worker he'd given a ride to, and that the perfume was probably from a client he'd met with. He said I was being...
Her voice breaks, a lone tear escaping down her cheek.
He said I was being a paranoid bitch.
Renee and I are both shocked at Astrid's raw emotion, the harshness of the words used against her clearly wounding deep. I reach for a box of tissues, sliding it across the desk towards her, while Renee's comforting hand finds its way to Astrid's shoulder, a silent gesture of support in this moment of vulnerability. There's no excuse for anyone to speak to you like that, I say firmly, my distaste made clear. Astrid accepts the tissue, dabbing at her eyes, a shaky breath indicating her struggle to maintain composure.
We've been married for 15 years,
she whispers, her voice gaining a semblance of strength.
But we have two beautiful children. I can't believe it's come to this.
Renee leans forward.
Miss Everly, you're doing the right thing by seeking the truth. No matter how painful it may be, knowing will give you the power to make informed decisions about your future. There's something else.
She hesitates, as if weighing the risk of sharing more.
It might sound odd, but there have been occurrences, things I can't explain. At night, I've felt a presence, something unsettling, watching over us.
The mention of a presence catches both Renee and me off guard. It's a departure from the infidelity case we thought we were dealing
with. Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3.
Dealing with, hinting at something deeper, perhaps even darker. You mean, like a stalker? I asked. Astrid nods, unable to produce the words. Stalking is a very serious matter, Renee says, the detective in her surfacing with a palpable intensity. Are you sure about what you felt? Have there been any signs, any tangible evidence of someone physically stalking you or your family? Astrid looks uncertain for a moment, then nods, her resolve firming. At first I thought it was stress, but then... She pauses, her hands trembling as she fishes her phone out of her purse. A few nights ago, she starts. The kids were at my sister's, and Zane was out, as usual. She navigates through her phone with deliberate taps, opening an app connected to her home's security system. I installed a Ring cam last month, just to feel a bit safer, you know? With a few more swipes, she turns the phone towards us, displaying a video captured by her Ring cam. The footage is grainy, typical of night mode recordings, but what it reveals sends a chill down my spine. It shows Astrid's front porch bathed in the eerie glow of the security light. Then, without warning, something darts across the screen, a blur of motion too rapid to decipher. It's there and gone in the blink of an eye, leaving behind an unsettling afterimage that seems to hover in the night air. The motion is too swift, too large for any common animal, and there's an odd, almost deliberate evasion in the way it avoids the light, slipping into the shadows with an ease that suggests intelligence, or perhaps something more sinister. I thought it was just a stray animal at first, Astrid says. Astrid's fingers shake slightly as she swipes to the next item on her phone. I found this the next morning, she said, handing the phone over for us to see. The image that greets us is deeply unsettling, a tangled mess of what appears to be intestines and long, straight black hair, left in a sickening pile on her doorstep. I've seen enough in Iraq to recognize the unmistakable look of human intestines. I don't know what to do, Astrid continues, her voice shaking. Of course, Zane dismissed it, said it's just something the cat dragged in. Astrid's face is pale. I had hoped it was just some sick joke. Maybe kids playing a twisted prank, but... Her voice trails off. My kids, she whispers, her voice fraught with fear. What if whatever did this comes back? What if they're not safe? Renee and I exchange a glance, both of us understanding the gravity of the situation. This isn't just a case of potential infidelity or even stalking. We're potentially looking at something far more dangerous. This is the kind of case we live for. We'll take your case, Miss Everly, I say, my tone conveying not just our acceptance, but our commitment to seeing this through. We'll do everything in our power to get to the bottom of this, Renee says, echoing my resolve. Astrid's shoulders seem to drop ever so slightly at our words. It's clear she's been carrying this weight alone for too long. Thank you, detectives, she murmurs, her gratitude palpable. The sun is already high in the sky, and we begin preparing to set up additional security measures around Astrid Everly's house. It's imperative that we work discreetly, ensuring that neither Zane Everly nor the stalker notice our presence.
with Astrid's kids safely away at school and Zane presumably engrossed in his daily routine, we have a narrow window to operate under the radar. Renee and I arrive in our nondescript SUV, our truck filled with the latest in surveillance technology. We have compact cameras that can be concealed easily, motion sensors that are no bigger than a pack of gum, and a couple of high-definition night-vision cameras to cover the darker corners of the property. While I focus on finding the optimal spots to place the cameras, Renee meticulously checks for any blind spots in our coverage. We communicate in low tones, a silent dance of efficiency honed by years of working together. Once the equipment is in place, camouflaged amidst the everyday, we retreat to our makeshift command center, the back of our SUV, screens aglow with feeds from the newly installed cameras. Everything appears serene, but we know better than to trust appearances. The true nature of the threat still eludes us, hidden in the shadows of uncertainty. Our next move is to keep a close eye on Zane. Tailing someone without drawing attention requires a blend of patience and subtlety. We follow him as he moves to the streets of New Orleans, our steps shadowing his with careful precision. He seems to be following a routine, visiting places that one would expect a man of his standing to frequent. The office, a local cafe, and a series of meetings that appear mundane on the surface. Yet our focus isn't just on Zane's whereabouts. We are equally attentive to his interactions, the pauses in his day, the way his gaze lingers a touch too long on certain individuals. It's a delicate balance, observing without engaging, collecting pieces of a puzzle we're still trying to understand. As the day wears on, the mundane nature of Zane's activities begin to paint a picture of a man ensnared in the trappings of a double life. The evidence is subtle, hidden in the nuances of his behavior, yet unmistakable to the trained eye. He's cautious, perhaps too cautious, with his movements and communications, suggesting an awareness of being watched, or at least the possibility of it. Zane's path leads him into a quaint flower shop nestled between a bookstore and a bakery. During a momentary lull in our surveillance, I pull out a container of Chinese takeout. Cold sesame noodles and spicy orange chicken, our stakeout meal. As we eat, Renee turns to me, a mischievous glint in her gray eyes.
"Hey,"
she said, her tone light but carrying an undercurrent of seriousness.
"You'd never cheat on me, right? I mean, with all this infidelity we see, you haven't gotten any ideas, have you?"
I can't help but chuckle at her question, the absurdity of the thoughts mingling with the gravity of our current case.
"Cheat on you, Em?"
I start, leaning closer to her, our knees touched in the cramped space.
"And miss out on Friday night stakeouts and takeout with my incredibly sexy and talented partner?"
Renee giggles, the tension easing between us as she nodded in agreement.
"Good answer,"
she said, her gaze softening.
"Your turn,"
I say, nudging her gently with my elbow.
"You wouldn't cheat on me, would you?"
"Bon Dieu, non,"
Renee utters, feigning indulgence, feigning indignance.
"I would never consider such a thing."
"Really?"
I ask with a grin.
"Not even if Brad Pitt decides he was in need of a private eye with your extensive expertise?"
"Well,"
she drawls, the corner of her mouth ticking upward in a smirk.
"If we're bringing
brand new luxury apartments, if you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Brad Pitt into the fantasy, I suppose I'll have to at least consider the consultation fee.
As long as it's just a consultation. I quip, winking at her. I guess I could live with that, but just so we're clear, if Scarlett Johansson comes knocking, I expect the same courtesy from you.
Do you expect us to work that case together?
She says, her voice dripping with innuendo. Two heads are better than one, right? I ask with a grin, especially when it comes to thorough investigations.
Right. It's all about the team effort.
Renee laughs, shaking her head. Our lighthearted banter is cut short as the screens flicker with movement. Suddenly, the flower shop door swings open, and Zane steps out, cradling a bouquet of roses that seems almost too delicate for his broad hands. The sight snaps us back to the task at hand. We start the car and follow him at a discreet distance. Our route takes us through the heart of the city, past the colorful facades of the French Quarter, and eventually into Morigny, a neighborhood known for its bohemian atmosphere and tightly knit streets. Zane pulls into the parking lot of Les Etoiles du Nord, a boutique hotel, a place that prides itself on discretion and privacy. Perched in our vehicle across the street, we watch Zane through binoculars, the lens bringing him into sharp relief against the backdrop of the hotel's understated elegance. He waits by the entrance, the bouquet of roses in hand, the casual stance of a man comfortable in his surroundings. Moments later, a woman approaches. She's strikingly beautiful, with high cheekbones and a delicate, structured jawline. Her eyes, a deep brown, are alert, yet hold a hint of mystery. Most distinguishing is her straight black hair that cascades down her back, hair unmistakably similar to the tangle left on Astrid's doorstep. The air between them is charged, the reunion marked by an intimacy that leaves little doubt of their relationship. They embrace, a greeting that quickly deepens into a kiss, a confirmation of suspicions we didn't want to validate. Renee, with a camera in hand, captures this exchange. The shutter clicks, a silent witness to the betrayal unfolding before us. Zane and the woman made their way to the room on the third floor. We watch in silence through the balcony window as they undress each other, their movements fluid and intimate. I'm left with a deep sense of discomfort, feeling the urge to look away. But as I'm about to pull away and give them their privacy, I catch a glimpse of something unsettling. As Zane and the woman are locked in a passionate embrace, her head detaches from her body with a surreal ease that defies all logic. Her body slumps to the floor, but her head remains suspended in midair. Internal organs dangle grotesquely from her neck, swaying slightly as if caught in a gentle breeze that does not exist. Before Zane can even begin to process the nightmarish turn of events, the woman's floating head lunges at him, teeth bared. She's not just biting his face. It's more vicious, more savage. It's as if she's trying to consume him, her teeth tearing into his flesh with a ferocity that's both shocking and horrifying. Renee and I exchange a glance that carries the weight of 1,000 words. It's a look that says, "Did you see what I saw?" And we need to move now. Without a word, we leapt into action. I grab my Beretta from the glove compartment, checking the clip in one fluid motion, while Renee does the same. Our footsteps are a rapid, synchronized rhythm against the pavement as we sprint towards the hotel's entrance, bypassing the startled doorman who shouts after us, questions hanging in the air unanswered. The lobby blurs past us, a mixture of luxury and confusion as the receptionist begins to protest, but the urgency in our strides silences any further inquiry. We take the stairs, 2 at a time, the sound of our boots echoing off the walls. Reaching the designated floor, we move down the hallway, guided by the cacophony of a struggle that grows louder with each step. The numbers on the doors blur past until we find the one that matches our frantic search. We come to a skidding halt outside the door where a cleaning lady stands, paralyzed by fear. The sounds emanating from within the room are nothing short of chilling, a cacophony of snarls and screams that seem to seep into the very marrow of our bones. Her eyes, wide with terror, dart between the door and us, as if she's caught in a nightmare she can't wake up from.
"Open the door, now!"
Renee commands. For a moment, she hesitates, her hand trembling so violently it seems she might drop the keycard. I lock eyes with her, my gaze imploring her to trust us.
"We're here to help, please."
With a shaky nod, she swipes the card.
The soft click of the lock disengaging sounding almost deafening in the charged silence that follows.
Get somewhere safe and call 911. Tell them we have an emergency.
Instructor. She nods, her face drained of color, and scurries away. I cautiously push the door open. The scene that unfolds before us is one ripped straight from the darkest corners of unimaginable. The headless, nude body of the woman lies crumpled on the floor. The woman is drenched in the overpowering scent of an exotic perfume, the same one Astrid had described, a fragrance that now seems to cling to every surface, saturating the air with its cloying sweetness. But it's Zane that captures our immediate attention. His back is turned to us, and from the neck down, he looks entirely normal, if one can consider any part of this situation to be so. But where his head should be, there's nothing recognizable as human. Instead, an undulating mass has taken its place, pulsing and writhing as if it's burrowing into his body, consuming him from the inside out. Renee and I edge forward, our weapons drawn and aimed squarely at what remains of him.
Zane Everly, turn around slowly with your hands up, I call out.
The words feel surreal, as if spoken by someone else. He responds, but not in the way we expect. The movement is unnatural, a series of jerks and spasms that suggest the thing wearing Zane like a suit is unfamiliar with the body it's inhabiting. The parasitic mass where his head once was pulsates with a sickening rhythm, tendrils flailing, seeking, as if searching for a new host to infect. Eyes, if they can be called that, shimmer with a malevolent intelligence.
Jesus Christ!
Renee mutters under her breath. My stomach turns, the scene defying logic and sanity. But it's not just the horror of Zane's condition that heightens the tension. It's the realization that the body of the woman, the one we had just seen, is not where it should be. The room, though chaotic, lacks her presence.
Renee, where's the...
My question cuts short as a cold grip tightens around my wrist. I whirl around, my heart pounding, to face the headless, nude body of the woman. Her grip is ironclad, her strength unnatural. In disbelief, I see the sinew and muscle of her neck twitch and pulse where her head should be. I try to level my pistol at the headless torso, aiming to neutralize the threat. But she's too fast, too strong. With an unexpected force, she twists my wrist painfully, causing my shot to go.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Wide. The bullet, meant to stop her, punches a hole in the plush carpeting of the hotel room. Renee, quick as ever, tries to make a move to help me. But before she can get close, the amorphous head attached to Zane's body detaches itself and launches in her direction. It's like something out of a nightmare, a living mass with tendrils that act almost with a mind of their own. As it flies through the air, the tendrils extend, reaching for Renee. It wraps its tendrils around her with a precision that betrays a malicious intent, disarming her in a single, fluid movement. The gun clatters to the floor, a sound harsh against the eerie silence that envelops the room. Renee struggles against the creature's grip, but the tendrils tighten, constricting like boa constrictors. They wind around her neck, her torso, squeezing with a strength that is both terrifying and otherworldly. Renee's face contorts with pain, her eyes meeting mine, a silent plea for help written in her gaze.
Renee!
I shout, desperation lacing my voice. My partner, my wife,
The person I faced countless dangers with is now inches away from death by this unimaginable foe. I yell at the creature, "Let her go!" For a fleeting second, the tension in the room ripples with the uncertainty of the thing's response. Then, in a voice that is eerily calm and chillingly clear despite its formless source, the creature responds.
"Stay out of my way. I won't warn you again."
Then, abruptly, the entity's grip loosens around Renee and drops her. Renee gasps for air, her face flushed from the constriction. As the headless woman releases her vice-like grip on my forearm, I rush towards Renee as she stumbles back into my arms. I catch her, my relief palpable. We both regain our footing, keeping wary eyes on the creature. As we watch, stunned, the head slowly drifts back towards the woman's body, reattaching itself to her neck. The seams where flesh meets flesh knit together in a spectacle that's both horrifying and mesmerizing. Within moments, the transformation is complete, and the woman stands before us, her appearance as flawless and composed as when Zane first greeted her outside the hotel. In the chaos of the moment, the entity undergoes yet another grotesque transformation. A pair of dark, leathery wings unfurl from her back with a sinister grace. They're massive, spanning the width of the room, knocking over furniture as if they're mere obstacles in its path. With a powerful flap, the woman launches herself towards the balcony, shattering the glass doors in her haste to escape. The night air rushes in, mixing with the stench of decay and the iron tang of blood, creating a maelstrom of senses that leaves us momentarily disoriented. We rush to the balcony, just in time to see the woman disappearing into the dark sky. Her flight is erratic, a sign of its newfound form, but she quickly gains altitude and vanishes into the night, leaving behind a trail of questions and a palpable sense of dread. Part 2. We stare at the gaping hole where the balcony doors once were, the shattered glass glittering like ice under the moonlight.
"Oh dear, what was that?"
Renee whispers, her voice a mix of fear and awe. I shake my head, unable to formulate a rational explanation.
"I don't know, but we need to move. Now."
There's no time to waste. We need to act fast before the police arrive and questions start being asked. Questions we can't afford to answer. At least, not yet. First, we slip on gloves and wipe down every surface we've touched, erasing our fingerprints from the glossy expanse of the door handle, the jagged edges of broken glass, and the sleek metal of the railing. As Renee retrieves the spent shells, I focus on the bullets lodged in the floorboard. Using a pair of pliers, I carefully extract the still-warm, deformed slugs. Next, we gather every shred of forensic evidence we can, working with the precision of surgeons. Every second counts, and as we hear the distant wail of police sirens drawing nearer, the urgency ratchets up. We collect the fragments of what was left behind by the creature, using tweezers to place each macabre piece into small, sealable bags. Renee quickly snaps photos of the crime scene, ensuring we have visual evidence of everything we've witnessed. I spot Zane's phone discarded on a chair, the screen cracked but still glowing faintly. I snatch it up, knowing it could hold the key to understanding not just his infidelity, but possibly even the origins of the creature we just encountered. Slipping through the service entrance, we make our escape, just as the first police cruisers turn into the hotel driveway. The night swallows us whole, just another pair of shadows among many. The drive back to the office is a silent one. Both of us lost in our thoughts, trying to process the night's events. The moment we step through the door of our office, Abby looks up from her desk, her face lighting up, but her smile fades when she sees the grim expressions on our faces.
"Everything okay? You look like you've both seen a ghost,"
Abby says, her concern evident as she takes in our disheveled appearances. Renee lets out a wary sigh.
"Clear our schedule for the next few days," she tells her. "We've got a lot to sort through."
I head to my desk and pick up the phone. I dial Astrid's number. She answers on the second ring, her voice tinged with apprehension.
"Miss Everly, it's Ash. We need you to listen carefully,"
I began,
My words measured. Zane. Something's happened to Zane. I explain in broad strokes the events of the hotel, carefully omitting the more horrifying details, though I made it clear that Zane won't be coming home, and that law enforcement will soon be in touch to provide her with more information. Astrid's reaction comes as a mixture of shock and a strange, resigned calmness. The line is silent for a moment. After I finish speaking, the only sound is her steady breathing.
I don't know what to say. Is he...
Her voice trails off, unable to finish the question. He's gone. I'm very sorry. I reply gently. There's a heaviness in my own voice. Astrid takes a deep breath, a faint tremble detectable in her sigh.
Okay. What do we do next?
First things first, Miss Everly, I say, leaning back in my chair, my eyes tracing the grain of wood on my desk as I gather my thoughts. We're going to make sure you and the kids are safe. I recommend staying with someone you trust for the next few days, somewhere you feel secure. We'll handle everything from our end. I can hear the hesitation in her voice.
But what about you? What will you do?
We're working on gathering as much evidence as we can, piecing together what happened. I assured her. We're going to do everything we can to get to the bottom of this. Her breath hitches slightly, and I can almost see her nodding on the other end of the line.
Okay, Detective Tran. I trust you. Please, just find out what happened and stay safe.
After the call with Astrid, we dive into the investigation's next phase. The key, we hope, lies with Zane's phone. Cracked screen and all, it's potentially a window into the motives and means.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Means behind the horror we witnessed. The first hurdle, though, is gaining access to the device. With Zane's status, asking him for the passcode or facial recognition is a non-starter for obvious reasons. That leaves us with the fingerprint sensor. It's a long shot, but it's all we have. We've lifted prints before, mostly from scenes less grisly than this, but the principle remains the same. With a bit of forensic delicacy, we manage to lift a clear thumbprint from the back of the phone. Zane's, no doubt, considering the placement and the repeated pattern of smudges. Using a technique that's equal parts art and science, we transfer the prints onto a thin layer of silicone. It's a bit of a MacGyver move, but desperation breeds innovation. Holding our breath, we press the silicone against the sensor. There's a tense moment, a heartbeat where nothing seems to happen, and then the phone unlocks, granting us access. The phone's home screen greets us. A clutter of apps and notifications that hint at the double life Zane Everly has been living. As we sift through his messages and call logs, we stumble upon a series of texts between Zane and a woman named Chantrea. The exchanges are a damning chronicle of their affair, sprinkled with explicit photos that leave nothing to the imagination. The intimacy and frequency of their communication suggests this wasn't just a fleeting encounter, it was an ongoing, sordid affair. Their texts suggest meetings that were carefully planned and executed with a level of secrecy you'd expect from someone with a lot to lose. They mention rendezvous at a place called Serenity Touch, a massage parlor that, based on the reviews on Google Maps, offered services far beyond the typical spa menu. Delving deeper into the exchanges between Zane and Chantrea, we begin to notice a pattern of coded language peppered throughout their conversations.
Phrases like extended session and private therapy recur, suggesting that their meetings involved more illicit activities. It became clear that Chantrea was likely a sex worker at Serenity Touch, the massage parlor doubling as a front for a brothel. Chantrea's messages to Zane were laced with a mix of professional detachment and genuine emotion. It was evident she had developed feelings for him beyond their transactional relationship. She frequently inquired about his day, his thoughts, and, more pointedly, his family. Zane, for his part, navigated those questions with a calculated vagueness, sharing just enough to keep her engaged, but always stopping short of revealing too much. Among the flurry of texts, one conversation in particular catches our eye. A discussion that paints a clear picture of Zane's reckless pursuit of thrill at the expense of others' feelings. In this exchange, Zane suggests introducing another worker from the parlor, Soraya, into their liaisons. His message is cavalier, treating the proposition as nothing more than a novel adventure to spice up their encounters. However, Chantrea's response is anything but enthusiastic. She reacts with a mix of hurts and indignation to a menage a trois. She accuses Zane of diminishing what they had. Her threats to end their relationship over this is clear and unmistakable, leaving no room for misunderstanding. The revelation of this discord adds another layer to the already complex narrative. Zane, in an attempt to mend fences and perhaps soothe his guilt, resorts to a classic, albeit cliched, gesture, a bouquet of roses. His subsequent visits to the quaint flower shop, as captured by our surveillance, now takes on a new significance. It was an attempt at reconciliation, a plea for forgiveness wrapped in the delicate petals of flowers. The key to unraveling this tangled web, we decide, is Soraya. She's the missing link, a potential treasure trove of information on Chantrea, and possibly even insights into the otherworldly horror we encountered. But how do you approach a sex worker in a brothel-fronting massage parlor without alerting the entire operation? Or, worse, scaring her off? Badges and warrants aren't tools in our kit. We need finesse, subtlety, and a bit of creativity. The neon sign of Serenity Touch flickers in the early evening dusk, casting an ethereal glow on the otherwise nondescript stone front nestled between a nail salon and a 24-hour diner. Its windows are darkly tinted, offering no glimpse of the activities within, a deliberate choice designed to preserve the anonymity of its clientele. As I enter the establishment, the interior unfolds like a scene from a classic noir film, dimly lit, with soft, ambient music floating through the air. The decor leans heavily into Asian aesthetics, with bamboo plants strategically placed around the room, border features bubbling quietly in the background, and delicate paintings of serene landscapes adorning the walls. The air is scented with a blend of jasmine and sandalwood, and calming aroma that seems designed to soothe the senses and disarm any initial hesitations. The camera, cleverly disguised as a button on my shirt, transmits live footage to Renee, who's stationed in our vehicle parked across the street. The receptionist, a woman with a calm demeanor and a welcoming smile, greets me.
Welcome to Serenity Touch. My name is May. How can I help you?
I clear my throat, the words slightly catching as I try to adopt the persona we'd concocted on the drive over. My nervousness must be palpable. But just then, Renee's voice crackles softly in my earpiece, a steady whisper of encouragement.
Stick to the scripts. You've got this, mon amour.
Taking a deep breath, I met May's gaze.
Hi, May. I'm new to this sort of thing.
I start, feigning embarrassment.
A friend recommended. He says y'all give great massages.
Of course, we offer many types of massages. Swedish, deep tissue, aromatherapy, all very relaxing and good for stress.
She lists off.
You look tired. Maybe you should try hot stone. Very popular and good for sore muscles.
Actually, I was thinking of something perhaps more along the lines of a private therapy session.
I venture, using the coded language Chantrea and Zane had employed in their texts.
You know, something more personal.
Mai's expression shifts subtly, her welcoming smile tempering into something more guarded, but still polite. Her eyes scrutinize me for any hint of duplicity.
You say your friends told you about us?
She asks.
Who's your friend?
Mai's question catches me slightly off guard. I figure that Zane, with his double life, would likely have used a pseudonym during his visits here. I think back to Zane's texts with Chantrea, remembering seeing him occasionally referring to himself as Mr. Zen in their conversations.
Yeah, Mr. Zen,
I reply, maintaining my feigned casual tone, but watching Maya closely for any sign of recognition.
You know, white dude, bit taller than me, with light brown hair, always looks like he's headed to a business meeting. You know Mr. Zen?
Maya hesitates, her eyes scanning me more intently now, as if trying to peel back the layers of my facade. She leans back, slightly, arms crossed as she assesses the truth in my words.
She's not buying it,
Renee murmurs through the earpiece.
You have to sound more convincing.
Feeling the pressure, I push a bit harder, the story pouring out more desperately now.
Look, Mai,
I start, my voice lowering to a conspiratorial whisper. I'm gonna be honest with you.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
My marriage is, it's on the rocks. My wife has been on my fucking case a lot lately. And to make matters worse, we haven't been connected, you know, intimately for months. I'm just looking for something to feel again, to bring back some spark.
Maya looked at me, her face showing a hint of curiosity.
Oh, I see. You have a lot of stress, huh?
You have no idea, I say, sighing heavily. Maya glances around the softly lit lobby, ensuring no one else is within earshot.
Okay, listen carefully,
she says, her voice low and urgent.
I can maybe help you, but we have to be very careful, okay? If police come here, I get in big trouble with my boss.
She locks onto me with an intensity that lets me know she's more afraid of her boss than being raided by the police.
Look, I'm not a cop or anything,
I assure her, my tone earnest.
I'm just a guy at the end of his rope, looking for some relief. Okay, I understand.
May relents. She takes a deep breath before reaching under the counter and pulling out a glossy brochure that she hands over to me with a flourish.
We offer very special sessions. They make you feel new love and guarantee a very happy ending. You interested?
Yes, very much, I reply, genuinely relieved.
Thank you.
I follow Mai to the waiting room that is small and tastefully decorated, with a single plush chair and a small table adorned with magazines and a vase of fresh flowers. She gestures to the chair.
Take your time, no rush, she tells me. Each girl is very skilled. Choose one, then tell me. I'll make special arrangements for you.
Opening the brochure, I find myself looking at a series of suggestive yet tasteful photos of masseuses, each accompanied by a name and a brief description of their specialties. They all appear to be of Southeast Asian descent. As we flip through, I can't help but feel a pang of guilt, knowing that some of the women might not be here by choice. As I continue flipping through the brochure, Renee's voice comes to the earpiece, her tone sharp.
Wait, go back a page. I think I saw her.
I thumb back to the previous page, and my eyes immediately lock onto the photo of the woman. Her resemblance to the woman from the hotel is undeniable. The same high cheekbones, the same piercing gaze. Even her hair, neatly styled in the photo, matches the long, straight black hair we saw. Under her photo, the blurb reads, Soraya, a touch of mystique with every session. Trained in the ancient tantric arts, she will guide you to new realms of relaxation. Maya leads me down a narrow, dimly lit corridor that twists and turns more than I'd expected.
passing several closed doors where the muffled sounds of clients having sex can be heard. Finally, we stop at a door that's slightly ajar. Mai pushes it open, revealing a small room lit by soft, golden light that casts long shadows across the sparse furnishings. The room is dominated by a large massage bed, draped in crisp white linens, and surrounded by candles that emit a soothing lavender scent. The air is warmer here, heavy with the scent of essential oils that mingle with the faint aroma of incense. Mai gestures towards the massage bed with a small bow of her head.
Undress, please. Soraya will join you soon, okay? Relax first.
As I nod in understanding, Mai pulls a thick curtain across the doorway, enhancing the room's privacy before she exits. The sound of her footsteps fades quickly, leaving behind a silence that feels both serene and charged with anticipation. After a short wait that felt longer due to the anticipation, the door curtain rustles slightly, and Soraya enters the room. Her presence commands immediate attention. She wears a silk robe that clings delicately to her form, leaving very little to the imagination. A sheer, flowing garment that accentuates her slender figure.
"Hey, handsome,"
she greets me, her eyes scanning over me.
"My name is Soraya. What's your name?"
I give her one of the aliases I often use in these situations.
Hey, Soraya, my name's Sunny. It's nice to meet you. Sunny, why are your clothes still on?
She asks, her expression one of playful adornishment as she pouts seductively.
The massage can't start until you take them off.
Hey, actually I was hoping we could just talk for a bit.
I say, uncomfortably. She tilts her head slightly, a look of confusion briefly crossing her face.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Before her professional smile returns.
Talk. Okay, we can talk later. But first, let's shower. Make you feel more relaxed.
Soraya's hand is gentle yet firm as she takes my arm, guiding me towards a glass-enclosed shower at the corner of the room.
You're very tense,
she observes, her fingers pressing expertly along my shoulders.
I'll help you relax first, then we talk.
She's graceful, almost cat-like, as she leads me by the arm toward the shower area at the back of the room. Her touch is gentle, yet firm. A professional maneuver designed to ease clients into relaxation. Her hands move to the buttons of my shirt, intending to help me undress. I gently grasp her wrists, stopping her.
I'd really prefer it if we could start with a chat, I insist, trying to keep the situation under control. You look strong, like an athlete, maybe. You work out, don't you?
She taps my arms lightly, her touch light and teasing.
Very big muscles, not just fat. Good.
I chuckle awkwardly, not used to being the focus of such comments.
Thanks. I try to keep fit. Keeping fit is good for stress.
She nods. Soraya's gaze lingers on me, her eyes sparkling flirtation.
You're so handsome. Your wife, she's crazy not to see what she has. Why does she make you so sad?
Her accent is thick, her words laced with a playful yet sincere tone.
Yeah, it's been tough,
I respond, giving a half-smile as I ease into the role we've constructed for this undercover interaction. I resist the pull slightly, halting her progression. Actually, Soraya, I really need to talk now. It's important. She looks at me, a hint of impatience flickering across her face before being quickly masked by a professional demeanor.
Okay, let's talk. But why are you so serious? You came here to relax, no?
She pauses, a flicker of surprise in her eyes, but then nods, stepping back.
I understand. You're nervous. I see. It's okay,
she says, her voice softening. Soraya takes a step back and starts to loosen the sash of her robe.
I'll show you first, so you're more comfortable,
she explains, her tone casual, yet observing my reaction carefully. The silk robe slips from her shoulders, falling gracefully to the floor, revealing her lithe figure, causing me to falter for a moment.
How do I look, Sunny? You like what you see?
I'm left there, mesmerized, with my jaw hanging open, but Renee's voice, crackling through the earpiece, snaps me back.
Stay focused, Ash.
Soraya, I know about Chantreya. I start firmly. The mention of the name causes her demeanor to shift, a visible jolt of shock passing through her.
Chantreya, what do you know about my sister?
She asks nervously, pulling her robe back over herself. Chantreya's your sister? I ask, surprise evident in my voice. The pieces begin to click into place, but there's still so much we don't understand.
Yes, she's my sister. What did you do to her?
Soraya's voice is tight, her body tensed as if ready to bolt at any moment.
I didn't do anything to her, I clarify quickly.
But something happened. I explain what we saw back at the hotel, keeping my tone even to avoid alarming her further. Soraya's eyes widen, her body tensing.
Do you have any proof? Do you have pictures?
I nod. I do, but they're disturbing.
I don't care. I need to see.
She insists, her voice firm despite her obvious anxiety. I pull out my phone, hesitating for a moment before opening the gallery. I show her the gruesome scene we stumbled upon. Soraya takes the device, her hands slightly shaking as she views the photo of Zane's mangled, headless body. She gasps, her face going pale at the sight of the chaos and carnage.
This... Did Chantreya do this?
It looks like him, I reply, watching her closely. There was something unnatural about her, something I've never seen before. She wasn't normal. Soraya looked up from her phone, her eyes haunted.
She promised she wouldn't do this.
I lean forward, keeping my voice low and steady. What did she promise you? She hesitates, then sighs, a sound heavy with resignation.
Okay, I'll tell you, but it's not an easy story.
I nod encouragingly, showing her it's okay to continue.
We're from a poor village in Cambodia.
Soraya starts, her eyes downcast.
Life was very hard there. Our dad was sick. He needed medicine, but it was too expensive. Then, one day, men came. They said they had work for us in America. They said we could make good money, send it home to our family.
Her voice falters, and it's clear the memories are painful.
Our mom, she didn't want us to go. She was scared. But we needed money for our dad. We thought we did the right thing.
What happened when you arrived in America? I prompt, gently.
It wasn't like this, Seth. They lied to us. They took us somewhere. Locked us in a room with many other girls. Beat us.
The words come out in a rush, her face flushed with the shame of recounting the ordeal.
They sold us. First time to the highest bidder. After, they forced us to work in sex work.
The story is all too familiar. A tragic narrative of exploitation that I've heard in different versions too many times. Soraya wipes a tear from her cheek.
It's hard, but we try to make life better here. Chantreya, she's always the strong one. She said she'd make them pay for what they do to us.
I nod, my expression solemn as I urge Soraya to continue, recognizing the courage it takes to reveal such personal pain. Her eyes darken with fear.
She didn't tell me how. I think she just told me to make me feel better. But then I found out.
What did you find out?
I ask, encouraging her to disclose more. One night, I woke up, hearing noises from the next room. I look, and I see Chantreya with candles, strange symbols on the floor. She's chanting. She doesn't sound like herself.
Soraya's hands clench as she recalls the memory.
And did she tell you what she was doing?
I press gently, trying to piece together the events leading to the harbor of the hotel. Soraya nods, her eyes wide.
She said she was doing dark magic from old village legends. She said she wanted to become something strong enough to take revenge. She wanted to become a Kamhoingslap.
Kamhoingslap? I query, struggling with the unfamiliar term. Soraya struggles for a moment, trying to find the right words in English. She looks frustrated, then grabs my phone, quickly typing something on it. I take the phone back and see that she has entered Kamhoingslap into Google Translate. The translation pops up as Winged Wraith. Winged Wraith, I read aloud, trying to grasp the significance.
Is that what she wanted to become?
Soraya nods again, her eyes filled with fear.
Yeah. She believes it to be the only way to be strong enough to fight back, to protect us. I was scared. I asked her to stop. I made her promise to stop.
I pause, taking it all in. This was no ordinary case of trafficking or revenge. It was something far darker and more complex. I need you to trust me, I tell Soraya, keeping my tone gentle. I just want to help you and Chantreya. Soraya bites her lip, her eyes darting around the dimly lit room, fear evident in her gaze.
I can't let you hurt her.
Her voice cracks, the strain of loyalty and fear mixing palpably in the air. I just want to make sure no one else gets hurt, including Chantreya. Anything you can tell us will be used to help her, not harm her. I assure her, hoping to ease her worries.
What do you want to know?
She asks. I need to know where she might go next. Who is she targeting? Soraya hesitates.
My sister, she said that she would find the big boss, the one who makes us come here.
She pauses, her voice barely a whisper.
She wants to make him pay the hardest, to make him an example.
The big boss? I probe, my mind racing with the implications. Do you know who he is? She nods reluctantly, her eyes darting towards the door as if expecting it to burst open at any moment.
His name is Jimmy Indavong. She says he's the worst one.
Jimmy Indavong, I repeat, recognizing the name immediately. He's the head of the Blue Lotus, a mid-tier criminal organization that's been on the radar for everything from illegal gambling rings to murders for hire. On the streets, he's known as the Shrike, because, much like the bird, he has a penchant for impaling those who cross him on sharp objects as a warning to others. Do you know where she might find him? Soraya shakes her head, her fingers twisting a strand of her hair nervously.
No one knows exactly, but she talked about a place, a warehouse, where they kept us when we first came.
A warehouse could mean any number of locations in the city. Do you know where this warehouse is? I ask, hoping for a lead. Soraya shrugs.
Somewhere at the north end of the city, near a river. I'm not sure. I only went there one time. Too many bad memories.
Thank you, Soraya. This has been very helpful. I tell her. Her eyes met mine.
You're really trying to help us? Not just catch Chantreya.
Yes, I want to help both of you. I'll handle your sister's situation carefully. I don't want to hurt her. We just want to stop her before things get worse. I reassure her, hoping to ease the burden she's been carrying. She nods, giving a small, uncertain smile.
Okay. I trust you. Help Chantreya Please, I don't want her to become a monster.
I will, I say, feeling the weight of that promise. Renee and I spend the next several hours piecing together the clues Soraya provided, cross-referencing everything from old case files to city planning records. We work well into the night, our office bathed in the soft glow of computer screens and the occasional flicker of streetlights from the window. We start by pulling up all known addresses connected to Jimmy Intavong in the Blue Lotus. We sift through heaps of digital breadcrumbs, ranging from property records to anonymous tips that had come in over the years. Each piece adds to the mosaic of the Shrike's operations, but fails to pinpoint the current location. Feeling a bit stumped, we decide to revisit the basics. We review hours of CCTV footage from cameras around suspected Lotus properties, looking for any unusual activities that might indicate the location of the warehouse Soraya mentioned. It's tedious work, but it pays off. Around 2 a.m., Renee catches a break. She notices a pattern of vehicles that seem to frequent a large, nondescript warehouse on the northern edge of the city, near the industrial canal. The area is mostly abandoned, filled with run-down buildings that scream perfect hideout. It's a place we've checked before, but not deeply enough.
That's gotta be it, Renee says, pointing at the screen. Look at the traffic there. It's subtle, but consistent, and always at odd hours.
We cross-reference the property with recent purchases and leases, finally finding a match through a shell company known to be a front for Intavong. It's not concrete proof, but it's enough to go on. With the location pinned down, we prepare what might be the most dangerous part of our investigation. Renee calls in a few favors from contacts who can keep the police off our trail for a while. We don't need the added complication of explaining why we're there or what we're dealing with. Secrecy and speed are paramount. We load up on equipment, more than usual. We're not taking any chances. The arsenal in our trunk would make a small militia envious. We've got AR-15s, tactical vests studded with extra magazines, and a couple of Glock 19s with suppressors. Everything's laid out in the back of our SUV like a dealer's display at a gun show. We meticulously rig improvised explosive devices, packing them into little sacks filled with sage and garlic. Renee says they're good for warding off evil spirits, according to Cajun myth. I'm skeptical, but I've seen enough tonight to entertain many possibilities. The drive to the warehouse is tense. We go over the plan repeatedly, infiltrate quietly, and get to Chantrea before something regrettable happens. When we arrive, the place is more eerily quiet than expected. The moon casts low shadows over the cracked pavement, and the warehouse looms like a dormant beast.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Using a set of bolt cutters, we cut through the chain link gate and slip onto the grounds of the compound. Every shadow seems to twitch with the possibility of danger. A reminder that we're walking into the lair of a monster. Just before reaching the main entrance, Renee stops short, her hand shooting out to halt me. She points to something in the shadows. My eyes follow her gesture, and my stomach tightens as I discern what's there. A body lies crumpled against the wall. Tattoos snake up the arms and across the exposed torso. Clear gang identifiers that match the Blue Lotus's known symbols. It's one of Intavong's thugs. I approach slowly, my flashlight cutting a beam through the darkness to reveal the man's neck, ending in a bloody stump. I scan the area and find his head a few feet away, eyes wide open in a silent scream, the terror of his last moments etched permanently into his features. More bodies appear as we advance, each more gruesome than the last. Heads, limbs, and other parts scattered haphazardly. We press on, guided by body parts like a macabre trail of breadcrumbs. The ground beneath our feet crunches with the occasional bone fragment as we move towards the warehouse, its large doors torn off their hinges. As we close in on the warehouse, the atmosphere is punctuated by the sound of screams and sporadic gunfire. Inside, the air is thick with the smell of gunpowder, and ground streaked in blood. As we cautiously step through the threshold, the interior unfolds into a scene from a nightmare. Chantrea, fully transformed, moves through the shadows with a terrifying grace. Her form is grotesque and magnificent, a malevolent blend of her human self and something far darker. Long, leathery wings protrude from her back, and her limbs have elongated, ending in talons that rend through flesh and bone with ease. Her eyes glow with a feral, otherworldly light. In the Vong's men lie scattered in disarray, some still twitching in their final moments. Chantrea cuts through them with deadly precision, her movements neither hurried nor slow, but inevitable. Their screams are interrupted by the wet sounds of tearing flesh and Chantrea's haunting wails. At the far end of the warehouse, cowering behind a makeshift barricade of crates and barrels, is the Shrike. The gang leader's usual composure has dissolved into panic. He shouts orders that go unheeded, his men too scattered and frightened to mount any effective defense. We're powerless to do anything except find shelter behind an overturned table and bear witness to the unfolding carnage. As Chantrea advances towards him, Intavong pulls out his Desert Eagle, his hands shaking as he fires desperately. Bullets cut through the air, but Chantrea dodges them effortlessly. She weaves through the air, her wings beating with a heavy, ominous thud that resonates through the property. As the last of his pistol rounds click empty, Shrike's false bravado crumbles into raw desperation.
Oh, wait, please. Look, I got a $250,000 in that safe right there. He pleads,
his voice breaking as he points frantically towards a heavy iron safe in the corner.
It's all yours, girl. Just let me go, all right?
Chantrea pauses for a moment, her head tilting slightly, as if amused by Intavong's pathetic attempt at bargaining for his life. There's a mocking glint in her glowing eyes, and the faintest hint of a smile curls the corner of her mouth. It's a sinister, unsettling gesture that chills the air between them. With a swift, horrifying grace, she lunges forward, her arms wrapping around Intavong in a grotesque embrace. A sickening sound of tearing flesh and snapping bones echoes through my ears. Shrike's body, torn in half, right down the center. His body splitting with sickening ease, as if made of clay rather than bone and sinew. Blood splatters in an arc, painting a gruesome picture on the concrete floor. As Chantrea's rage finds its terrifying crescendo, she tosses the two halves of his body in opposite directions with the indifference of a capricious child discarding a broken toy. The right half flies through the air, trailing a ribbon of entrails and blood before slamming into a large shelving unit near us. The impact is thunderous, reverberating through the vast warehouse. It sends the heavy shelving teetering dangerously. We barely have time to react. The shelving unit, overloaded with crates and metal tools, groans ominously, threatening to collapse. Renee grabs my arm, pulling me back just as the structure gives way, crashing down where we were crouched moments ago. Dust and debris fill the air, the crash masking our frantic movements as we scramble for new cover. Our sudden, desperate dash does not go unnoticed. The disturbance catches Chantrea's attention, her head swiveling towards us with unnerving speed. As the dust settles, we find ourselves barely a dozen yards from her, our position dangerously exposed. Chantrea's eyes, glowing fiercely in the dim warehouse light, fixate on us with a predatory intensity. Realizing the futility of standing our ground, I grab Renee's hand, squeezing it tightly.
Run!
I shout. Part 3. Renee and I sprinted, our breaths ragged, dodging between stacks of crates and abandoned machinery. The vast, shadowy expanse of the warehouse seems to stretch on indefinitely, a labyrinth of dangers. Chantrea's monstrous silhouette cuts through the darkness, an avenging spirit too swift, too enraged to evade. Behind us, Chantrea's wings flap ominously, the air hissing as she slices through it. I glance back just in time to see her launching herself into the air. As we run, I reach into my coat pocket, fingers wrapping around one of the homemade IEDs I packed. They're a simple concoction, a mix of garlic powder and sage stuffed into a small canister. Without slowing down, I yank the pin and lob the makeshift grenade back over my shoulder. It arcs through the air, trailing a faint white smoke. It lands near Chantrea, exploding in a cloud of pungent garlic and burning sage. The burst isn't lethal, but the payload stuns her. Her sensitive senses overwhelmed by the intensity of the smell. The cloud of smoke provides a temporary screen, obscuring her vision and giving us precious seconds. The sounds of Chantrea's rage-filled roars fill the warehouse. As the winged wraith launches into the air, her head detaches with a surreal fluidity, soaring ahead of her body like a macabre scout. Her body, still terrifying in her headless state, propels forward, fueled by a dark energy and rage. The detached head flies directly toward us, with its eyes glowing a sinister red, a beacon of malice in the dim warehouse. As Chantrea's head zooms towards us like some twisted missile, I pivot on my heel. AR-15 shouldered in one smooth motion. I squeeze the trigger, sending a volley of bullets stitching through the air toward the disembodied head. But Chantrea is unnaturally agile. She dodges with a nightmarish grace, my bullets slicing only through the stale air. Renee, beside me, has her Glock drawn, firing several shots. The head veers off at the last second, avoiding the shots with a mocking ease that sends a chill down my spine.
God damn it!
I curse under my breath, ducking behind a rusted forklift as Chantrea's body follows the path of her flying head, moving with a speed that feels like a blur. We're almost at the door of the warehouse when I hear it. A scream that cuts through the chaos with chilling clarity. It's Renee. My heart slams against my chest as I whip around, my worst fears materializing before my eyes. Chantrea's monstrous head has its elongated tongue wrapped tightly around Renee's ankle. She lifts her effortlessly into the air, dangling her like a puppet, her body swaying with every unnerving twitch of Chantrea's tongue.
Renee!
I shout, my voice cracking. My mind races, adrenaline surging through my veins like wildfire. I can't lose her. Not like this. Not to this nightmare.
Ash, watch out!
Renee shouts, her eyes wide in terror. Before I can react, Chantrea's headless body closes the gap between us with horrifying speed. My weapon is knocked aside with a swipe of her talon-like hand, and I'm thrust against the wall, her ungodly strength pinning me effortlessly. The cold, hard concrete presses into my back as her talons dig into the wall beside my head.
Chantrea, wait!
I choke out. Her talons pause, inches from my face, her headless body tilting as if puzzled.
Why wait?
Her voice comes from the disembodied head floating nearby.
Your sister sent us,
I shout, hoping the mention of her sister would pierce through her rage.
She asked us to find you, to help you.
The effect is immediate. The air around us shifts, as if charged with a sudden current. Chantrea's body stiffens, and her head, floating eerily beside her, regards me with a newfound wariness.
Soraya sent you.
A distorted voice carries a clear note of surprise.
Yes, Soraya.
I confirm, my breathing heavy.
She's worried about you.
Chantrea's head floats closer, her eyes glowing less fiercely now, examining me with an intensity that feels like it could peel back my soul.
She really said that?
Yes, she told us everything,
I say.
About the terrible things Intavon did to you. She told us about the rituals you performed. She loves you, Chantrea. She doesn't want to lose you.
I have to do this,
she declares.
They hurt us. They've hurt many girls.
Renee, still dangling from Chantrea's grasp, adds her voice, her tone strained yet soothing.
Chantrea, listen.
We're not here to stop you from making those fuckers pay. We're here to make sure you don't lose yourself in the process.
Gentria's head floats there, the glow in her eyes softening, the supernatural aura around her wavering as if caught in a dilemma. The talons near my face retract slightly, loosening their grip on the wall. Her headless body turns slightly, the posture less aggressive now.
Why would I trust you?
Her voice, disembodied and echoing, sounds less menacing, more curious.
You can trust us because we understand the pain and the betrayal you've been through. We work to protect people, to help them.
I explain, trying to bridge the gap of distrust.
You cops?
She asks, her voice a bizarre blend of ethereal and guttural sounds.
No, we're private investigators.
I explain, my tone calm and direct. Astrid Everly hired us. She was worried about her husband, Zane. I carefully watch her, trying to gauge her reaction. I can tell she's taken aback by this revelation.
I didn't want to hurt him. Not really. Just scare him.
She explains.
I feel bad for the wife and kids.
Chantrea's talons withdraw completely from the wall, letting me slide to the ground. She gently sets Renee down, who rushes over to me, her hands immediately checking for injuries. Her head, still detached, moves with a purposeful glide through the air, swooping down to where Jimmy Intavong had pointed out the safe. With surprising gentleness, her head picks up the heavy metal box as if it weighed nothing, floating back to where her body stands near us, dropping it at her feet. With a deft maneuver, the head reattaches itself to her neck, the seams knitting together seamlessly, as though they were never parted. Chantrea stands upright, her posture regal and terrifying as her talons curl around the edges of the safe. In one swift, fluid motion, she tears the door off its hinges, revealing stacks of crisp $100 bills piled neatly inside. She looks down at the exposed wealth.
This is blood money,
she states flatly.
They sold our bodies, our lives, for this. I did things. Dark things.
She gestures to the carnage around us. Renee, who's recovering from her ordeal, steadies herself and steps forward.
Chantrea, it's not too late to change the path you're on, she says gently. You can still make things right in other ways. Don't let this darkness consume you completely. Saraya can't see me like this. It's too much.
Chantrea's eyes meet mine, and in them, I see a plea for understanding, a deep sorrow for roads taken and those forever closed off.
Take your share,
she instructs, nodding toward the safe.
Split the rest. Give it to my sister, and give it to Miss Everly. They deserve better than what life gave them.
Looking at the money, I feel a chill despite the sticky heat of the warehouse. The weight of Chantrea's gaze, those glowing eyes, makes it clear that her request is more of a command, one that I'm in no position to refuse, not with the power she wields. Renee and I glance at each other, a silent agreement passing between us.
We'll make sure it gets to them,
I finally say, my voice steady but my mind racing. Chantrea nods, her eyes shifting away, as if looking back on the havoc she wrought is too much even for her.
Good. This is the right thing to do.
Her voice cracks slightly. The edges.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Is right. Where will you go? Renee asks, her voice soft, careful. Chantrea looks towards the gaping warehouse doors, to the dark beyond.
Somewhere far. Hide. Heal, maybe. I won't come back.
She turns back to us, a shadow of regret passing over her features.
Tell Soraya I'm sorry. Tell her to be strong. There's a better life here for her.
We will. I promise. My heart heavy. And, Chantrea, take care of yourself. She gives a short, curt nod. Then, with those powerful, dark wings, thrusts herself up into the air and through the door of the warehouse. The breeze from her departure flutters through the space, sending loose papers and debris swirling in her wake. Then, she's gone, disappearing into the night sky, leaving us alone with the silence and the dead. Renee and I work quickly to gather the money from the safe. Once the money is secured in our sturdy duffel bag, we move on to the more grim task of wiping down a crime scene for the second time that night. By the time we're done, the eastern sky is beginning to lighten, the first hints of dawn casting a pale blue over the city. We're tired, emotionally and physically. As we drive back to our office, the city of New Orleans is waking up. The streets are still mostly empty, the quiet of the early morning hanging over the French Quarter like a delicate veil. We don't speak much. There's a mutual understanding that what we've experienced tonight is too vast, too raw to be distilled into words just yet. Back at the office, Abby greets us with a puzzled look, taking in our wary faces and the dirt and grime that coat our clothes.
Rough night?
She asks, concerned.
Something like that?
Renee replies, managing a tired smile. We'll fill you in later, I add. We assure her everything is handled, then retreat to our private office to decompress. Renee sits across from me, her fingers drumming on the desk.
What are we going to tell Astrid about her husband and the money?
We'll tell her the truth about Zane. As for the money... I pause, weighing the words. We tell her it's a restitution of sorts. It doesn't replace her husband, but it's something to help her rebuild.
And Soraya?
Renee asks, her gaze steady. We set her up with her share, make sure she's safe and can start anew. I lean back, feeling the exhaustion of the night washing over me. Renee nods, her hand reaching across the desk to squeeze mine.
We did a good job tonight, Ash.
Yeah, I agree, squeezing back. We did what we could. I made my way to Soraya's apartments in Gretna, carrying the black duffel bag weighed down with the responsibilities of Chantrea's last request. It's a modest building in a part of town that's seen better days, but there's a quiet dignity about the place, a testament to the lives within making the best out of hard circumstances. I knock on the door, each tap echoing slightly in the narrow, dimly lit hallway. After a moment, the door creaks open and Soraya's face appears.
Hey, Sonny.
She greets me with a tentative smile that doesn't quite reach her eyes. Her look is one of cautious optimism, worn by too many hard days.
Hey, Soraya,
I say, offering a small smile of my own. Can I come in? She nods, stepping back to allow me space to enter.
Yes. Please come in.
Her apartment is clean but sparse, the furnishings minimal, a few personal items dotting the space to make it feel lived in. She gestures to a small table with a couple of chairs.
You want to sit?
I nod and place the duffel bag on the table, its contents shifting with a soft rustle. She sits opposite me, her posture upright, an anxious energy about her.
You find Chantrea?
Her voice holds a mix of hope and fear, the balance precarious. I take a deep breath,
the weights of the news I bring pressing down on me.
Yeah, I found her.
I pause, choosing my words carefully.
She is very brave, Soraya. She did what she thought was necessary.
Soraya's eyes search mine, looking for the unsaid words.
Is she okay?
I let out a sigh. She's safe, but she won't be coming back. She asked me to give you this. I gestured towards the duffel bag, unzipping it to reveal stacks of bills neatly bundled. This is your share of... it's money she wanted you to have. To help you, to make things a little easier. Soraya's eyes widen as she takes in the sight of the money. Her hand hesitantly reaches out to touch the crisp bills as if to confirm they're real.
Is this real?
She asks, her voice barely above a whisper.
Yeah, it's real,
I assure her gently.
And don't worry about where it came from. We've taken care of everything. It's laundered. Clean money.
Soraya pulled her hand back, her eyes still locked on the money.
But why did she do this? Why not come and see me?
Her voice breaks a little with emotion, the struggle between gratitude and loss evident in her tone. She wanted to, I reply, trying to provide comfort.
But she's changed. What she went through, what she became, it's complicated.
She didn't want to put you at risk. She loves you a lot, and this was her way of trying to make sure you're taken care of. Soraya nods slowly, tears swelling up in her eyes.
I always told her, no matter what, we are together. But now, she chose this way.
She wipes a tear from her cheek, her gaze hardening a bit as she processes the reality.
She always protected me, since we were little. Always.
She's still trying to protect you, in her own way, I say, offering a reassuring smile. Soraya looks down, fingers tracing the edge of the table before she meets my eyes again.
And what about you? I don't know how to repay you.
Just take care of yourself, and use this money to make a good life here. That's good enough for me, I say, standing up to leave. And if you ever need anything, you have my number. I hand her my card. Soraya's fingers lightly grasp my arm as I turn to leave, her touch gentle yet firm enough to pause my steps. She leans close and looks up at me, her eyes glistening with unshed tears. There's a brief moment where her lips hover near mine, the space charged with unspoken words. Then, with a graceful pivot of her head, her lips press a soft, grateful kiss against my cheek instead. She steps back, giving me a small, sincere smile.
Thank you, Sunny. I'll never forget this.
I nod, returning the smile. Take good care of yourself, Soraya. As I walk down the dimly lit hallway, the echo of my footsteps blends with the murmurs of the city beyond. Life has a way of rolling on, even after the shadows creep in and show you things that can't be unseen. Renee and I, well, we're still doing our thing, chasing leads, cracking cases, and trying to keep it all together. I still keep a casual eye out for any news on Chantrea. You could say it's part professional habit, part genuine concern for what became of her. Every so often, stories pop up on true crime forums that catch my attention. Unsavory characters found dismembered in the darker corners of the city, always accompanied by accounts of a flying demon woman with a detachable head. Whatever Chantrea became, whatever darkness she embraced or was thrust upon her, it's still out there.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments. River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.